Good afternoon, you're listening to Campus K News for Thursday, March 26th. I'm Taylor Heckert. For months, Petersburg's Claussen Museum has been investigating the more than 90-year-old murder mystery of Sing Li, an influential Chinese businessman from Petersburg's frontier past. Li originally came to Wrangell in the early 1900s as a cannery worker. He became a successful merchant and expanded his business to Petersburg. But in November 1932, Li was found brutally murdered in his Petersburg apartment. The killer was never found. The investigation is now an exhibit titled Sing Li, The Man, the Murder, the Mystery. I walked through the exhibit this week with museum staff. We first stopped at a crime wall, which displayed the circumstances and suspects of the murder, all connected with red string. Sarah Peterson is the museum director.
So we have it set up on one side with the investigation. So the autopsy report, the scene, that sort of thing. And then the other side, we've pulled together a handful of persons of interest, we call them. So one surprising thing that Sing Li did when he was living in Wrangell was adopt a young white boy. His name was Samuel Edwards. During the course of that relationship, Sing Li sent him to China to live for a while, brought him back, but later on, Sammy kind of had some criminal aspects to his life. And so we have him listed as a person of interest. Also, we left C.V. Brown and other city officials on there because he is known to be a corrupt law enforcement official. And one of the most common rumors still around town is that the government officials covered up or were in some way involved with this murder. And then there's also the kind of motive, common motive of just greed and money and gold. Sing Li was rumored to be quite wealthy. You know, perhaps it was just a crime of opportunity. He was also quite elderly at the time of his murder. So perhaps someone just saw him as an easy target with lots of potential wealth stored up in his apartments.
I mean, what was it been like looking into Petersburg's own kind of murder mystery?
This is Anne Lee. I'm the curator at the museum here. I've always heard about Sing Li and the murder of Sing Li, and I've always been curious. And in our family, it was always said that the marshals were involved or covered it up. Don't know if that's truth in it or not, but I've always been curious. I'm a true crime aficionado anyway, so this was right in my wheelhouse. And there was so much more that we learned.
Yeah, I mean, looking at this wall, there's a lot of people on this wall. Like, I feel like it looks like there are a lot of potential things that could have happened to Sing Li. Is that, like, a right takeaway?
Yeah.
Yes. It definitely is. One of our, I think, the fun aspects of this exhibit is this little public interaction aspect that we have, where after walking through and exploring the evidence, people can make their own determination about who they think may have killed Sing Li. And people have had very creative, insightful comments. Because these folks visiting the exhibit, most of them have, like Anne, have had stories in their family about who killed Sing Li.
I'm really impressed by the sheer volume of stuff you have related to Sing Li. Like, this is a much bigger exhibit than I anticipated.
It goes on over here, too.
Oh!
So this is the murder aspect here, and then in the next gallery, we just sort of highlight some of different aspects of his life and some of what we call the mysteries. Over here, we have a little section that we call the benevolent merchant, because he was just so well loved in town. He did all these wonderful, generous things for people. I think that's the dichotomy that's interesting in this story, is that he was very well loved. He was well known and well connected in Petersburg. And then he was also violently killed, and no one ever figured out who, or, you know, that was never solved at all.
What an interesting, complicated figure and a complicated story around him. How has the community reacted to this exhibit? It's been open all of March.
I'd say that people are still intrigued because we had hoped for more answers, but it's hard after all these years. But people are very intrigued and I think interested in seeing Lee, the man, again.
The murder is sort of the vehicle to tell the story of this really profound person who was very influential in Petersburg's history.
That was Clausen Museum Director Sarah Peterson and Curator Ann Lee speaking with me, Taylor Heckert, about the exhibit Sing Lee, The Man, The Murder, The Mystery. It'll be up at the museum through the end of March. The museum is open Monday through Friday from 1 to 5 p.m. and Saturdays from 12 to 5. One person died on Sunday in a major avalanche near Haines Pass, just across the border in British Columbia. Late March is typically prime time for recreation in the backcountry hotspot, but experts are warning about unstable snow conditions in the area that likely contributed to the recent tragedy. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, forecasters anticipate conditions won't improve anytime soon.
The victim was traveling with a group of five skiers in the Rainy Hollow area just over the Canadian border from Haines. Three skiers made their way down the slope before the fourth triggered an avalanche, which then triggered a much deeper, larger one. Zoe Ryan is a public forecaster with Avalanche Canada, a nonprofit based in British Columbia.
Even a small avalanche can be enough to create enough force that it impacts deeper layers than just the weight of a skier or a snowmobiler might impact the snow.
The slide completely buried one person, who died, according to an incident report by Avalanche Canada. The rest of the group was unharmed and removed the victim from the snow. Canadian police coordinated with Atlin Search and Rescue to retrieve the group via helicopter, according to a news release. Forecasters, including Ryan, say the tragedy is a reflection of a more precarious snowpack in the region than is typical for late March and are urging people to act accordingly.
People are really keen to get after it, and most people heading out in the backcountry in that area, they're heading out with the expectation that we're in a spring settled snowpack, but it's just not the case this year.
Conditions have been unstable in other parts of Alaska, too, including near Girdwood and Turnagain Pass, according to the Friends of Chugach Avalanche Center. An incident report published over the weekend says a recent avalanche in that area caught, carried, and injured a skier. In the Haines area, the instability stems from a few key factors. Jeff Moskowitz is the director of the Haines Avalanche Center. Perhaps the most important one, he says, is...
There's a unique layer that has formed in the snowpack, and it's been referred to as the love layer or the Valentine's layer.
He's referring to a freezing fog event in mid-February that created a thick, crusty layer of snow throughout much of the area. Moskowitz says it's impossible to know for certain where exactly the layer is, but...
We know that it's widespread and it's susceptible to human triggering.
Extreme cold temperatures in the time since have weakened the snow below and above that crusty layer, creating instability. That's resulted in a unique and dangerous setup, Moskowitz says.
In this case, with, weak, soft, sugary layers underneath, it might become harder and harder to trigger an avalanche, but if you do, it's going to have big consequences.
Both Moskowitz and Ryan emphasized that this winter has been atypical, with extremely cold temperatures leading to a weaker snowpack. That means Haines and the Yukon really still have a riskier winter snowpack as opposed to a spring one, and that's not expected to change anytime soon.
Realistically, we're going to be dealing with this persistent slab problem likely until we get a really significant warm-up this spring.
Until then, forecasters are advising people to be extremely cautious and to stay out of avalanche terrain. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
A Pulitzer Prize-winning comic artist recently spent 2 weeks in Sitka teaching high school students how to analyze and create their own comics. As KCAW's Ryan Cotter reports, the students and the artist ultimately ended up taking a page out of each other's books.
It is the week before spring break at Pacific High School in Sitka, and a handful of students are scattered across different tables in a classroom, hunkered down in their final projects. While students often find themselves polishing up their final essays or posters, these teens are working on a different assignment, original comic books.
I'm working on folding my comic because it's in a zine format.
sophomore Sydney Lindstrom, who is making her way through a stack of completed comic spreads. She layers the printed pages on top of a tablet, illuminating pure light to help her strain out her lines while she folds each paper into a pocket-sized magazine. Her comic summarizes creation stories from various cultures and compares and contrasts them to Western scientific theories she learned about in her physical science class. Until now, Lindstrom only dabbled in illustration, usually characters from her favorite TV shows, but branching out to a whole comic in a new style was a fun challenge.
It's like a style that I don't really ever draw in. It's not my style really at all, but it was interesting to try out the new style.
It is this very exploration of ideas and stepping out of one's comfort zone that English teacher Tristan Gavon hopes to instill in his students during the course.
Oftentimes, graphic novels and comics aren't necessarily seen as literature, but if you read them, you analyze them in the same way you would analyze a novel or, you know, a nonfiction book. There's so much richness there and just a great medium for students to explore ideas, to learn about other people, other cultures, times, events. And so I think they're just really accessible and just enjoyable.
While this is Gavon's second year teaching the comics course, it is the first time a guest artist helped lead the class, thanks to an Artists in Schools grant from the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. The artist in question is Maydar de la Cruz, a Pulitzer Prize-winning illustrator and comic artist. Chatting over Zoom from his home in Brooklyn, De La Cruz fondly recalls the first day at Pacific High when he revealed the wide variety of art supplies he gifted to the school, including Lindstrom's light-up tablet.
It was really cool to just watch everybody sort of flock to the materials and start using them. It's a really exciting thing, and it reminds me of my first time. I mean, every time I come home from the art store, it's almost like Christmas, and you just really can't wait to play with the tool and see what it does.
Still, De La Cruz said it took a bit of work to bring students out of their shells. He recalls leading them in an activity where they passed illustrations around the room at random, and each artist added something new, such as dialogue or another panel. It's typically a quiet exercise, but making it more conversational allowed the students to open up.
And there was a much more organic approach in this sense. And there was also a lot more laughing and a lot more fun being had than any other time that I've ever done this workshop. So it really gave me an opportunity to reconsider how I go about this in the future.
Today, those comics are proudly displayed on the glass walls of the classroom, with different drawing materials and art styles coming together to tell a wide variety of chaotically imaginative adventures, like the origin story of a swan and goose hybrid known as the Swoos, which became a running classroom gag. Gavon says the collaborative comic writing encapsulated the spirit of De La Cruz's residency.
It was such a great experience for me, and, you know, a collaborative one where students were able to be creative and express themselves through both art and narrative. And so I think that's something that I take from this class. I hope to build on is just that kind of spirit of collaboration and creativity.
As Lindstrom folds the last of her comics, she says De La Cruz inspired her to elevate her artistry.
He was really good at, like, freehanding his comics, which was surprising, but I want to try and do that more interested in general, just getting into comics, because this was my first time making, like, a legit comic, and it was really enjoyable, and I want to try it again.
Lindstrom has already given some of her comics to her teachers, but soon plans to distribute her latest completed ones to her family. She says she'll keep at least one for herself, too, and in the future, who knows how many more stories will stand beside it. In Sitka, I'm Brian Cotter.
For Campus K, I'm Taylor Hackert.